Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Lawrence Drank, also known as Sparky Lee, is back today to speak on a topic many in society rarely think about or may not be aware of. Lawrence will be speaking on post-incarceration syndrome, also known as PICS, a serious illness deriving from years behind steel walls, doors, and concrete floors, especially with no appropriate psychological treatment. Long-term sentencing is the very reason why mass incarceration in the United States must stop. Many individuals can't be confined to small cages for years without being affected. Many of them have claustrophobia. Many of them have other illnesses, psychological illnesses, that only increase in the damage done when people are kept in prisons for years, especially when they go in at a very young age. Additionally, there are many individuals who also suffer and already suffer from these claustrophobic symptoms before even being sentenced to prison, an extreme fear of confined places. With these pre-existing problems, we can see why the suicide rates are so high in the prisons throughout this country. Lawrence is going to talk about his time inside, what he went through. He's going to talk about what he did when he came out. He's going to talk about the struggles he went through, but also the achievements that he has made since being out. We want to welcome Lawrence, who has been a blessing to many of us, because he has been able to expose the penal system based on what he went through. So let's welcome Lawrence Drank to talk more on these issues and his experiences. Lawrence, are you on with us? Can you hear us, Lawrence? Okay, can you hear us now? Lawrence? Can you call, hang up, get off, and then come back in again? Because we're having a hard time. We can't hear you. If you can hear me, please try calling back again. Problem here. Apparently he's on with us, but we cannot hear him.
Hi, Leona. Okay,
hi, we can hear you now, Lawrence.
Okay, I was using my computer, so I'm learning how to use this thing. Sorry about
okay.
that.
No problem. So Lawrence, I'm sure a lot of the listeners have heard your story, but it always helps for those who have it, and it always helps to get updates on what has been progressing since you've come out, the achievements you've made. So once again, can you just please briefly talk about what happened to you in your young years and what changes have been made since your incarceration and release?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for having me today. I always enjoy my Sundays with you.
thank you.
So I grew up, first of all, my name's Lawrence. I'm also known as Sparky Lee on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and everything else. It's just a alias I use. So I grew up, I'm a product of molestation. You know, my mother molested me as a child. My uncle, she sold me for her drug habit to random men. I grew up in over 25 foster homes and over 30 group homes before the age of 18, before eventually landing in prison. So growing up, I had a lot of low self-esteem, belief, warped beliefs, and I had really no spirituality. So when I went through the prison system, I was told already that I was a monster and that I wasn't going to amount to anything and I was a nuisance to society. So I fed that monster and I allowed myself to live up those to those expectations because I figured whatever you told me I was going to be the best at it. And so through the years, I trampled over many rights and freedoms of my victims, of people. And I didn't care about anybody. I was in a survival state of mind where I couldn't live my life. And it was all about me in the moment. And in the process, I further caused damage to my my community, my family, and especially myself. So when I in prison, I was a very violent person. I was in a high security level 4 for most of my time before the point system, before y'all came out and started changing the laws and stuff where they had to take us out of those high security and put us into some type of environment where we could function because we were locked down 8 months out of the year. We were mistreated by the COs. We were degraded. We were packaged like a thing of sardines and treated like animals. And in fact, we call our yard the dog run in the hole and in the shoe. It's real easy to feed into that that belief that they fed us. So when I was recently released after 20 years, I did 20 years flat, and I was released homeless with no ID, with no social security card. Nothing. They set me up. They said there's all these programs that I could go to get clothes, food, and shelter. They also said I'd go to my parole officer for a hotel or a motel for at least 90 days to get on my feet. I got out, and I had absolutely nothing. There was no resources whatsoever. Found out that the programs that they recommended, they are for inmates, but whoever's funding them, they allowed the sheriff's department, prison to employment especially, they allow, and the DRC, they allow the sheriff's department to dictate who they allow in their program. So because I have a colorful history with the law, and especially in that county, they denied me. And so once again, I could not go get food, shelter, or clothes from any of these programs that were set up for us. And I didn't know what to do, so I paroled with my lovely pastor and his wife, and they took me in. They taught me life skills. They launched me off to do what I do. And in that process, I got ordained. I was able to start up my own business, and which is Legacy Programs Education and Reentry. And we focus on the things that I went through so that nobody else has to go through that. And that's been the thing right now. So since being out, and though I'm making these connections and I'm doing what I'm doing, now I struggle with the fact that I have these things that are wrong with me that I'm trying to rewire my brain again, which is I disconnect myself from my family and my community, and most importantly, society as a whole, because I have to challenge that belief that I'm a monster. I have to challenge that belief that I have nothing to offer to society. So there's times where I could be in a room with 100 people and still feel alone. And I retreat back to my safe zone, which is by myself. And that's not very, very responsible. And it most certainly isn't productive to be reentering back into society. So we at Legacy expose this for what it is, and we bring the community together to form a better environment for the person coming out. And this experience, though it's been a heartache, it has been the thing that is the strongest about me, is that I could survive anything, and that the fact that I'm able to pay it forward and do my best to make sure it doesn't happen to somebody else, that's what's resolving about it. And it's really a true blessing to go what I've gone through and make it, and to be able to come out and be helpful and useful to my community now, whether they like it or not, whether they want to hold that stigma that I'm just a parolee and I'm going back to prison. I'm here to prove them wrong. I'm here to still serve my community, serve the loved ones of the incarcerated and the families of the incarcerated.
You know, Lawrence, I want to thank you for talking about this, because you mentioned the programs that were supposed to be out there for you and how you were let down by a system of people who have these organizations and these programs that do nothing. but they get the fame, they get the media attention, they get the acknowledgement in all kinds of groups that they join in all kinds of organizations they network with. We have that not only with these aftercare programs that are supposed to be out there awaiting people like yourself, but we also have it in the law, legal. We have organizations like Prison Legal Services and others who have these organizations. They deny these prisoners help. There's one right now that's supposed to be a lawsuit that they claim to have taken on, and you don't hear anything more about it. Yet they're in the media, they're joining these groups in groups. They're joining these coalitions in groups. So who's minding the fort? Prisoners have exposed to me on many occasions that it's the receptionist that they deal with all the time when they call. But I just want to thank you for that. And if people like Lawrence Drink, also known as Sparky Lee, if people like Lawrence, growing up in an abusive background, going through so much as a child, as an adolescent, all the things that he has experienced in his life, to go to prison for 20 years, to come out, you listen to him and he talks with such intelligence and such wisdom. Sometimes the one people that does the most rehabilitation with an incarcerated individual is themselves. And we see this happening on so many occasions with people who are incarcerated that have to rehabilitate themselves either prior to coming out or once they come out. Lawrence has started these organizations, these groups, Legacy Program. He's been networking with advocates around the country. He's been on Facebook, getting involved in different groups and various groups. He's been doing all these things. And I just hope that the audience listening is going to really, really listen to his story and want to do something to help. Lawrence spoke this morning at a meeting that we had, a virtual meeting, with advocates who are actually wanting to volunteer to help the incarcerated population. And these are volunteer law students and paralegals and administrative assistants and researchers and people that are actually seriously wanting to help because they have heard of and they have seen and witnessed a lot of the abuses that are going on in the prisons today. I've also spoken of, and I want to repeat this before giving Lawrence back the stage, I want to mention the petition that has been filed on change.org to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. I would hope and pray that all of you will please go to change.org and look it up to replace prisons with long-term residential anger management facilities, long-term residential substance abuse facilities, long-term residential mental health facilities. Because this is the only way that these people are going to get the treatment they need. And as Lawrence was saying, when everybody calls you no good, not worth anything, it becomes one of those things where they feel they have to do what they're being taught that they are. And in his case, that's the way he felt. I have heard prisoners say that. I have heard even people of color that have said they expect a black man to do something wrong. So this is what happens in some cases. So we need to look at some of these things. And Lawrence, I want to give you back the stage because you have so much to offer, and I want you to finish what you were saying.
Oh, no, no problem whatsoever. I believe that when it comes to reentry, that there's no rhyme or reason. There is no recipe. There is no one way of doing it. Reentry is a life thing. It is in relationships with everybody. It is from your responsibilities. It's from little things that you do in the day where just brushing your teeth. That is reentry, because reentry is clearly just rewiring your brain to be some type of normal. But the honest truth is there's no such thing as normal. There's so many, everyone's personality is so beautiful and so unique that to say what's normal and what's not is incorrect right there, because you're putting in a standard that can't be met, especially on the people coming from prison. The people from prison that have done time or are going through the process of doing time, there's a thing called arrested development. And, you know, you may be looking at a 50, 60, even a 30-year-old man, but he's really a 12-year-old boy trapped in a man's body. And there's a saying that hurt people, but heal people. And the thing is that we have to have compassion for people. And that I love what Marion Jacob says about how we have to focus on the person, not the crime. And I think that in society that we focus so much on a crime that we forget about the human being behind it and why it was done. And we don't look at that person as a human being anymore or as a victim of circumstance. We look at that person as a predator or a perpetrator. And we need to change that perspective because everybody is a human being and they need to be viewed as their life experiences as well. I mean, it's really messed up growing up in the system, especially as a child, where they told me for years I was a victim. And they allowed me to feel sorry for myself, and they made me feel sorry for myself, and they didn't educate me to further look at a possibility of healing. They kept me in a victim stance, and now, when I commit a crime and I go to prison, I'm no longer that victim. I'm no longer that human being. I am this crime, and I'm categorized now, and that needs to change. I believe. So we talk about the emotional, the PICS, post-incarceration syndrome. And the thing is how I'll give you a little bit more insight because I spoke about it last week. So when we look at these beliefs, manners, and habits, that this belief we are either it's passed down in tradition or it's taught or we buy into it, what happens is that belief turns into a mannerism. And that mannerism is our actions. It's how we carry ourselves, how we speak, how we act, and it's because and that results into how we think. Well, eventually it becomes a habit. So if you think about it, like you're biting, you think your fingernails are too long, you start biting them, and next thing you know, it's a habit. You don't know why you bit your fingernails in the first place. It's the same thing with the incarcerated, is that there's a lot of bad habits that we picked up growing up, and they weren't. The thing is that they were coping mechanisms for the environment that we had to survive in. They weren't anything else. They weren't something that we just decide one day because we wanted to hurt people, or there's just something that's not wired right. And so when you talk about these issues that we have now, we come out here and we try to live a normal life, but there's no example of normal. So that's why it's important for the community to come together and give that example, to be that role model, to teach us about spirituality, spiritual principles, how to be kind, generous, remorseful. It's also the community's obligation to teach us responsibility, to give us little things that we can do to build up to a bigger responsible self. And as far as it's the community's responsibility to teach us relationships and boundaries and stuff like that. You know, I don't know where the model "It Takes a Village" disappeared, and it was so big in the 80s and in the 90s, and all of a sudden it just disappeared. And no, it's no longer a village. It's all every man for himself. And we were having this discussion this morning about who does it fall on when somebody gets locked up, and I blame the community. And I know there's people out there saying, well, it's not my fault that you went and committed a crime. It's not my fault that you went and hurt somebody. But let me explain and go in detail about that. So my goal is I'm not trying to change laws. That's not my forte. I'm not going in there and I'm not changing laws. I'm not, because it's too big. The system is so broken. It's going to be very difficult to challenge. And when I feel so overwhelmed with challenge, I usually result in taking a step back and getting back in my comfort zone. My thing is battling recidivism. I believe that if the community had more resources and more they were more united out here, what would happen is the people that are coming out would stay out. They would feel comfortable, accepted, and they would thrive in what they do to serve their community if you only gave them a chance. Now, people go, well, that's just for them. Well, no, this is how it goes deeper than that. When you supply all these resources and you guys are nurturing each other, what happens is the youth, the potential people that are going to go to prison, see the support network and see that that whatever they want to do, they can do. And that's how the reentry of the incarcerated serves the youth. That's how the reentry of the incarcerated and the returning citizens, it feeds and educates and nurtures the younger generation to give them options to not go down the wrong path. And I want to thank all the people and all the organizations that don't do your job. Thank you, because that just shows us what we could do better. It shows us, and it makes me very grateful for the organizations that we do have that are supportive. And that's just one of the things. We have to be supportive of each other.
We have a caller. Do you want to state your name, please? I guess they're just calling in to listen.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, you didn't interrupt me. You got anything to add to that?
Sam is telling it like it is, and I hope people absorb everything that you're saying. You know, this. A lot of people say anyone who does the crime deserves to do the time, but they forget a lot of times the overseers are doing a serious crime, worse than the incarcerated individuals, and yet they allow them to get away with it. They speak on their behalf. They defend them. So it goes to show you sometimes a dysfunctional country and a dysfunctional government, and unfortunately, people in the communities who have no insight into what's actually happening. Just because people wear uniforms and have titles does not eliminate them from being held accountable too. They're doing the crime, but they're not doing the time, because too many people in society are too busy listening and looking at those who stumbled or who were stumbled. We have to look at who caused, as Marion Jacobs and Lawrence mentioned Marion Jacobs earlier. Marion Jacobs is a psychosocial therapist who has worked in the prisons, has been in the prisons in the Netherlands, and has also been in prisons in Massachusetts and around the country, mainly Florida. And we know about the women's prison in Lowell Prison in Florida, where a lot of those female prisoners had been raped by the prison COs, the guards. And it came about recently. So I want the audience who are the people that believe that whoever does the crime should do the time, where does that fit in? Who's held accountable for all those women that were molested or raped by the staff? Who's held accountable for all those people that were put to death by the death penalty and later found to be innocent? You know, these people that are employed in law enforcement or in the penal system or in any other position, even some in nursing homes, there are people, elderly people, who are being violated. But because the people that are overseeing, that are caring for them, have titles and uniforms, no one looks at their crime. And that's so unfair. So I just wanted to bring that out so that everybody is aware of those that they are defending and those that they are condemning. And unfortunately, the prisons are full of people who they stereotype without even looking into the causes of their failures, their stumbling, their downfalls. Many of them, like Lawrence was saying with himself, many of these prisoners, many of these incarcerated men and women have been violated as children, have been beaten, abused as children. Many of them still. And unfortunately, once they commit one crime, one offense, and go to prison, it's all over again. They're starting all over again with the abuse. When does this stop for these incarcerated individuals who have been incarcerated because they were victims before going in? Who is defending them? Who is sticking up for them? Everybody talks about, what about the victims? What about the victims? We can't cover every victim. We can actually be very sensitive to victims in the communities, unfortunately, who took the crime upon themselves. They ended up being the victims by people who were so destroyed by others in the communities, whether it be law enforcement, whether it be prison officials, whether it be another individual who caused their own relative's crime, their own relative's death or whatever it might have been that was done against them. Sometimes people, they don't think and they do so much damage to another individual that other individual is going to end up falling. They're going to end up stumbling. All we need to do is show compassion, understanding. And I'll tell you, the Department of Corrections around the country, they have funds to prevent these people coming out to nothing. A lot of them are being funded for aftercare, supportive aftercare programs, yet no one hears about them. I stumbled across it one time with the Department of Corrections right in Massachusetts. So for these people coming out, they're coming out to nothing. There needs to be some oversight in the Department of Corrections nationwide to find out exactly what they're getting funded for and if those resources are being utilized by all prisoners or by certain ones. Pick and choose. It even happens with law firms, civil rights law firms. They pick and choose. Legal services, they pick and choose. Anything that's going to benefit them, bring them more money or bring them notoriety, bring them media attention, they're going to be out there. Who's minding the fort? Receptionists. Young paralegals. Think about it.
And that's funny you say that, because every time I signed up for a program out here, Prison to Employment or Daily Reporting Center, they gave me the runaround, and they sat there. I had some receptionists know nothing about me tell me, oh, well, you need to do this paperwork first. I'd call my parole officer and say, hey, I need this paperwork done. It would take her 2 weeks to do it, and then it would take 2 weeks for the other one, and then they say, oh, no, there's something else for you to do. You have to fill this out too. And by the time, I think 2 months into it, I finally got an answer saying that my parole officer straight told me that they won't touch you, that they will not, nobody will accept you. And that was their right. I guess, I don't know who does their funding, but apparently, I thought it was for all people coming home and that was on parole. But they chose to be selective on who they chose. So it is what it is. But I think it comes down to the community of us taking back our voice, taking back our control, and taking back our investment into everybody. And this doesn't just go down to, I know everyone thinks that it's just about incarcerated me, but it's not. It's about the community. If you see something wrong with one of the houses that a child's being neglected, you know, you don't have to call the cops. But you could also sit there and take that kid in, invite him over for dinner, give him a balanced meal, give him some clothes. And that's what we try to do at Legacy, is we bring the community and allow them to invest into a stock that's going to soar. And it needs to be done, because people have become so selfish out here where it's all about them that they forgot the person next to them. And like I said, we need to bring back the motto, it takes a village to raise a child, because those children are growing up to be men and women, and they're committing crimes against our community with no outside knowledge, with no examples, no role models. And that's part of the thing of growing up, is we believe what we're told.
Exactly.
You want to add something?
Exactly. You know, like you said, it's all about selfishness. It's all about me with the people in the communities and with the people that are supposed to be helping others. You know, every time anybody has tried to get help from for any of the clients, prisoners in this state, they've always been referred to one law firm, one legal services. And that legal services is everywhere. You see their name everywhere, but you don't see the work they're really doing. You know, and this is what's so pathetic, that when other lawyers and law firms see a name out there all over the place, and all these groups, and that's one of the main things they focus on, is getting involved in anything and everything out there so that their name is out there. But if there was any oversight, people would see that this legal services is doing absolutely nothing for prisoners. You know, there was a lawsuit filed last January of 2020, and a certain amount of people were chosen to be in this lawsuit. And to this day, a year later, you don't hear anything about it. But yet, these people that took on this lawsuit, took on this case, they're in all these coalitions that are going on right now, abolishing LWOP, life without parole, you know, abolishing solitary confinement, restrictive housing, post-conviction. They're all over the place. but they're not in the place they should be in, where everybody's thinking that they're doing a job to help the incarcerated who are really suffering severely. ACLU is another one. Every time anybody contacts them, they say they don't have the resources or they don't have the manpower. How can you not have resources and not have the manpower when you got four and five or more lawyers or people involved in the same coalition? People need to wake up. Seriously, there's so much injustice in this country. There's so many people, and suicide rates are so high in America. Mass incarceration, so high. If there was some oversight, everybody is so focused on themselves and their friends, their peers. They're so focused on making money. They're so focused on having power and fame that they forgot how to be human beings. And because they forgot how to be human beings, they condemn those in the prisons who are victims, who have become perpetrators, who are victims all over again. Because no one was there to support them prior to their conviction, prior to their offenses, and no one's there to support them now. And retaliation, there's a lot of kids that are growing up in homes that are so cold, they don't have time for their children because they're teaching their children how to hate others or how to be above others. So these young people, want to retaliate against their parents. So what do you do if you want to retaliate against your parents? You want to get out there and do something your parents don't want you to do, whether it be associating with a person of color where the family is racist, whether it be to go out there and associate with somebody that's been in and out of trouble to get the attention from their parents, whether it just be to show somebody less fortunate that they have all this money in their family so they can get away with so much. There's so many reasons why people stumble. And it has a lot to do with the retaliation against your parents or retaliation against somebody that has committed an offense towards a relative, perhaps, or a friend. And that's another thing. People, instead of trying to help your friend or your family member heal, they try to increase and instigate because they want to see something happen. They want to see more action. If you notice on television, people are so, and in the movie theaters, people are so anxious to see so much violence that the producers are making more and more and more. And they're taking all of these sad stories, all the blood, sweat, and tears from true lives, from people that are really going through pain, sorrow, and suffering. They're making movies about it. And people are out there paying all this money to be at these movies, be in these theaters. So what they do is they look for exactly what's going on today. They look for somebody that has stumbled. They look for people that have committed crimes. The more violent, the better it is for the producers. But for these young people that are watching it, it's in their head. It's filling their head. So they want to go out and they want to do the same thing because this is what they're seeing on TV.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any feedback on that, Lawrence, but please tell me, is this how it happens or is this how it happens?
Well, I can remember growing up, my influences were Scarface. That he was my idol. Scarface, Al Capone. I wanted to be the bad guy. And you know, when you tell me that I'm a monster, I'm going to show you a monster. I'm going to be the best monster you've ever seen. And somehow we believe that it's self-gratifying. It's when I get to sit there and I'm dubbed, the titled something, and I'm raving havoc, it gives me some satisfaction in that I'm winning. It's a control thing. A lot of us growing up didn't have control. And like Leona says, rebelling against the parents. When you're dealing with the incarcerated or the formerly incarcerated, you're dealing with children. I don't care how old they are. They're children because the thing called arrested development, when you are a traumatic event in your life, stunts your mental capacity. It just stops it. They're now coming out with stuff for youth offenders where it's amazing how at first it was 18 years old that you were an adult, then it was 23, and now it's what, 26? So I mean, the proof is in the pudding, as it said, that this is proven that, you know, our minds, hallmarks of a youth even up to the age of 26 years old. So how far behind is our community when it comes to this? If 26 is the age of where we're adults and we can start seeing consequences and making better choices and decisions, what's it telling you about an 18-year-old that has a traumatic past that was stunted at 9 years old? How much more work does he or she have to do to make it to make up for that time? And everyone's so quick to point a finger and to punish and to lock them up and throw away the key, but nobody wants to help. Everyone thinks that out of sight, out of mind is just as good. But you're not understanding the traumatic environment that prison produces. That the people going in aren't they just coming out with the same issues and same set of emotional distress, but they're coming out with even more. And that's what I'm experiencing now, is that trying to get back into society is a whole lot harder than it was just trying to adjust and adapt in prison. And I'm taking all this prison stuff out here, and I'm an example of who's paroling in your neighborhood. You can't tell I was a gang member. You can't tell that I did violence. I have no tattoos. I don't dress like the incarcerated. I don't act like I was incarcerated, but I feel like I've been incarcerated. And that's the problem, because as I talk about beliefs, manners, and habits, so I'm constantly having to check my belief system, my warped beliefs. I'm constantly having to check myself on how I act. And I have to double check always my habits, because I got more bad habits than I ever did before. So
That's why I try to get people to sign that petition to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. And you know something, people, they talk so much about wanting to see their loved ones get the right treatment. And there's people in society that want so much to see these crazy people or these drug-addicted people get the help they need so they can feel safe in their communities. But yet they don't want to sign petitions like this. You know, and that's sad. That's sad because this petition involves psychiatrists and psychologists. It involves...
Are you at 1,200 yet? How many people signed already? Almost 500 in, what, a year? Well,
it's over 500 now, but it still should be a lot more. And like I say, these facilities, long-term residential treatment facilities, would involve vocational counselors. It would involve, you know, employment counselors. It would involve occupational therapists and physical therapists and psychological, social, like Mariam. Mariam Jacobs, she should be working in the prisons, because her wisdom and her concept of the things that are going on, the individuals, as you say, she doesn't judge, she doesn't look at the crime itself. She looks at the individual and the causes of crime. But these are so simple. To make things right in a wrong society, a society that's been affected, to make things right, it's so simple. We got a nation, all they need to do is to sign petitions that involve psychological treatment and medical treatment and substance abuse treatment, because those basically are the epidemics in this country. Not only sign up,
yeah,
but call the politicians and say, you know, we want to help make this right. We want to make these people that are committing crimes, we want to make them feel like they're part of society. And we want to see them healed. If they're having psychological problems, we want to see them receive the right treatment. I mean, this petition would cover all of this. The psychiatrist, psychologist, it would cover everything. And restorative justice, bringing the incarcerated individual and the victim or the victim's family together to talk about why they did it. Why did you do this? What happened? You know, there was an incarcerated individual in court that talked about being molested when he was 6 years old by a family member. So what did they do when they sent him to prison on a first offense and gave him a life without parole? The first thing they did, they put him on a block with all pedophiles. This is somebody that disclosed after all those years, disclosed that he had been a victim of molestation. And this is the return. This is what happens They put them on a block with all pedophiles. Now, that's humane. This is our society that looks at the person that commits the crime, but they don't look at the people inside, the overseers, and the serious crimes they commit. And like you said, Lawrence, you went through a lot when you were inside, and people looked at you totally different. They didn't look at you as somebody that had been a victim, that had gone through so much. They looked at you as somebody that deserved to be in prison for all the years you were in prison.
Oh, they told me I'd never get out. The COs, they would tell me that I'd never deserve to get out and that I should die in prison. And that was just based off of, I think my furthest crime was when I was 15 years old. You know, I have a history. I've been getting arrested since 9 years old. And it was simply acting out. And so what happens is growing up, when your needs are not met, you adjust and adapt, as I called it, and you do accordingly to your environment, and you pick up these things called social masks. Well, those social masks allow you to make choices and decisions based on your environment. So it was no different going into prison. In prison, I was around a bunch of killers, lifers. When I first landed in 18 years old, I was on a yard with 90% lifers. 90% that were never getting out. They put me in a cell with a guy with 3 life sentences. So, you know, the growing up in the system, there's a threat of violence, and that's where I learned my respect. That's where I learned to be considerate. And a lot of my bad habits of today, that can be used for good. But when you're told that you're not going to amount to anything, and that's not the words that were ever used to me, and this is by group homes, foster homes, everybody, that you're a bad kid, you're manipulative, and you're going to die in prison. So eventually, I remember at 9 years old, I told my teacher that, you know, they go around and they say, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, where do you see yourself? And everyone's picking doctors, lawyers, police officers. I was the only one in that school in history to ever say I was going to be on America's Most Wanted. And then the teachers are all, for what? And I said, I'm going to kill a bunch of people. So, but that's how I felt at the time, because I was so angry. Society let me down. They allowed this stuff to happen to me. And instead of addressing me and saying, what's wrong? How did we fail you? What could we have done for you? They sat there and said, lock them up. Don't let them out. And that's the problem. I think society today would rather lock us up and throw away the key, because they're the ones responsible for our downfall. They didn't do enough. And so we need to start doing more. And, you know, and it's little things. For instance, I got a letter from somebody in my church that I'm part of. And she wrote me a letter today, and I'll just go to this one part that she said. And she said, and there's another thing I want to mention to you. It is from an old kid story about Winnie the Pooh. Winnie was a bear who needed encouragement, and Christopher Robin was a boy who provided. And he says he needed encouragement from time to time. The story goes like this. Christopher Robin says to Winnie the Pooh, you're braver than you believe. You're stronger than you seem and smarter than you think. And she said, I have needed encouragement from time to time also, and have said his words to myself. Just a week ago, I was struggling with something on my computer. I told myself with determination that I was stronger than I seemed, and it helped me getting through it. And she said, keep moving forward, Lawrence. You have a new life ahead of you. We are praying for you and standing with you, and God is with you. With his help, may you and Samantha and Aiden build a family unit that is strong, loving, and supportive of each other. So that's the thing, is like just little things like that. She sends me this little card that just says, promise me you'll always remember you're braver than you believe and stronger than you seem and smarter than you think. That's all. And that right there is enough encouragement from 1% of my community to make me go forward. So you don't have to sit there and put a bunch of money. All it takes is a kind word, a kind action, and some a thoughtful moment of somebody else other than yourself.
You know, I was just going to say, that's all it takes. you know, just a few kind words to make such a big difference. You know, especially when we have so many people that talk about, you know, believing in God, and a lot of them go back to the very beginning where it says you, what does it say, something to do with when you do something to a person, they, you know, it comes back, you do the same thing or whatever it is. But the thing is, they don't realize there's so many things that they can do that doesn't even take them out of their home, that doesn't even cost them money, that doesn't do anything. All it does is to give a few warm words or forgiving words or a letter, to even to write to an incarcerated individual. You know, there's so many ways they can do it. If they don't want to do it from their own address, contact an agency, somebody, an organization working with prisoners, and say, can we write to an incarcerated individual? Can you send it? Can you do it through your PO box or whatever? And then when it comes back, can you scan it to me or send it? I mean, a lot of times that's all it takes. It doesn't even take going out of your home. It doesn't take costing any money. It doesn't do anything. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of prisoners prior to going in who did so much good to help others that were in need. And even to this day, there's a lot of prisoners inside helping other prisoners who are less fortunate, who are meek and weak and being preyed upon. And there's prisoners that come out and do exactly what you did, Lawrence, to get your life together, to try to start some things, to try to bring awareness, to try to educate people who don't think that prisoners deserve to be on the outside. And the funding, the monies that it's costing taxpayers in this country to fund the DOC, Department of Corrections around the country, to fund their programs, the money is going into the pockets of these people running these facilities, not the prisoners. Prisoners are not getting the food, and Lawrence can tell you, he's going to talk about these things, but the prisoners are not getting the good food that you think that they're getting. They're not getting the program that they think that you think they're getting.
If only you guys saw the pictures of food we eat in prison. It's funny how it's costing almost $100,000 to warehouse an inmate, but yet the money that it takes in there to provide for to be at least $5 a day, if that, not even that. It's the food has gone down. They took out all the real meat, so there's no protein. It's all soy. And they do this by design because they want us weaker than the COs. Because the CO standard, to be an officer, all you need is a GED. You could be 300 pounds and be a CO now. Before, they had standards. They had height requirements. They had weight requirements. You had to be physically fit. And now it's become it's such a lucrative business that they just allow anybody to come in. And like I said, can you imagine in a 60-man riot and having a 200, almost 300-pound CO trusting him to save your life? He's not going to make it there in time. He's going to run out of wind. And I've seen that happen. In the youth authority, it was even worse, where they closed the gates and wait for the riot squad to come. They didn't break up fights. So, and in prison, it's just, it doesn't take that much to warehouse us. The clothes have gone down. The fabric sucks. It's, they've also, the food is the portions are a lot smaller, and you'd be amazed of how much food they throw away. They keep us malnourished. They keep us underfed, and they keep us cold. That's just what they do. Prison is not somewhere where we go get better. And they don't provide services for that. You can't get any mental health classes unless you take a type of pill. And this is by design, again, because they get paid for everybody that's triple CMS in California and that takes some type of pill because they have some investment. So it's not like you go in there and you're like, you know what, I don't need any pills, I just need therapy. And they're like, nope, you have to take pills in order to get therapy. So now you got a bunch of people on pills that don't need it. So we're wasting our resources.
You know what I find?
But,
what I find, too, is the diagnosis. I don't know what your diagnosis was, but I know a lot of prisoners, again, I say this all the time, a lot of prisoners who have post-traumatic stress syndrome or some other psychological illness, they're all getting diagnosed almost all of them, a lot of them are getting diagnosed with antisocial behavior. They're not properly diagnosed. And I wonder where the medication is going in those areas. What kind of medications are they usually given? And where are those medications going?
Normally we take Prozac. We were taking Wellbutrin and Seroquel, and they took those out because there was a high suicide rate on those types of pills. 100% of everybody is antisocial. That's how they justify when we go to boards for early release. That's how they justify not letting us out. Because like myself, I was diagnosed with antisocial disorder behavior and manic depression. So they throw that on everybody, though. Like if there's 10 people you talk to in a prison, 10 people will tell you the same thing. And we all take the same medications. We all take high blood pressure, high cholesterol. We all take most of everybody's diabetic in there. The diabetic line is ridiculous. It's out of 1,000 people, you probably got about 300 diabetics. And so, and like before, I was on insulin, and I wasn't even supposed to be on insulin. And every time you go to the doctor in prison, they come up with a different diagnosis. They sit there and say, oh, well, you know, we want to take this from you, but we want to give you this. And they use us as guinea pigs for these new medications that come out. That's why we all don't take the same medications as we did 20 years ago, because now they came out with some new generic pill that they want to try out on everybody. So everyone thinks that, you know, and when I first went to prison, they didn't do fillings. They didn't do crowns and all that. If you had a cavity, they yanked your tooth. That's why most everybody from back in the days, we have no teeth. You know, fortunately, I got mine, but I've lost a few. But then that's
lack of treatment. I'll tell you this, prison is still after over a year or after over 2 years, some even 3 and 4 years, that have yet to be treated medically. And they have now, they're walking around like old men with all kinds of arthritis in their whole body. And then they're a lot of them being forced to double cell in this pandemic when there's all these empty cells that are unutilized. I don't know why people from the outside can't see these things.
Well, because they don't want to, Leona. It's better off out of sight, out of mind. That's how the MA population is. You know, you'd be surprised at how many people just disregarded me, and then on my way out, everyone started coming around. Everyone wanted to be in my life again. And I had to make the deciding factor that, you know what, you weren't there for the struggles, but you want to be there for the beauty. And as free as I am today, physically, mentally, I'm still imprisoned. Spiritually, I'm still locked up. And emotionally, I'm still trapped, you know, because I'm dealing with not only with the stuff from the 9-year-old still and trying to resolve those issues. Now I'm trying to resolve the issues of being incarcerated, being dehumanized, being thrown in a closet for 20 years. For being in a when I was in prison, 8 months out of the year, we were locked down. We were lucky to go to yard. There, you know, a stabbing every 2 weeks, a murder every month. I mean, how many murders do you have to see in front of you, within arm's reach, do you have to see until it's normalized? And the answer is 3. Once I saw 3 murders, when I saw the guy next to me get murdered and stabbed 40-something times, and I had to walk over his body to get to my cell, that's what made it normal. At that moment, when I was able to walk over that man's body and not help him, that's what made it normal. And there's something wrong with that. So the thing is that this is the stuff we come out with. This is stuff that most of us don't even talk about. Because when we talk about it, everyone looks at us like we're weird, like we don't fit in, like what the hell is wrong with you? And you know what? There's a lot of things wrong with me right now. But yet I smile, I dance, I walk, and I act like nothing's wrong. But inside, sometimes it's like a cat trying to get out. It's the weirdest feeling. And nobody understands it except for my people.
Can I go back on one thing you just said, and it's so true. When you came out, a lot of people all of a sudden, like nothing happened. They want to be friends with you again. They tell you how much they miss you. They tell you all these things, right? Prior to going to prison, they were your best friends. But going to prison, they never took into consideration, why did he do this? you know, what happened? Let me ask him. Let me visit him and ask him. No.
Yeah.
And, you know, families do the same thing. You know, they why did he do this? A lot of times they automatically go to the other side, the victims. And one of the things is we have victims and we have victims. And so it doesn't hurt to go to both victims and find out what happened. Support the victim that was offended, but also go to the one that offended and find out, especially if you've known that person all their life and they've never showed signs, they've never done anything wrong, they've done everything right. So all of a sudden now they commit an offense for the first time. Go to them and find out what happened. And the sad thing about it is, like you say, when they come out, it's going to be a different story. You know, we really missed you. What have you been up to? I know there was a young man who committed an offense for the first time, and he left the country. And one of his best friends who lived right in the same on the same street, they grew up together from elementary right up until high school. And that person said, why didn't he come to me? Why didn't he come to me and talk to me? And I said, you know why? Because of the same reason now. He's been in all these years, and not one of you went to see him. Not one of you try to find out what happened. Not one of you to try to support him. And this is what happens even with family members. They assume because the public, a lot of them are afraid because their pride gets in the way. And that's why I say pride should not get in the way when it comes to somebody you talk about being so close to at one time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when a society lets you fail, I mean, are you really going to depend on them and give them a second chance to let them fail you again? And that's one of the things we come out with, the mentality that nobody's going to be here for us, that we can't trust nobody. And when programs further deny us and reject us, it feeds into that belief that I'll just do this on my own. And that's why when I got out, I started like the programs, education reentry, because it's not about just the education. It's about the awareness, and it's about having – there's so many components of coming out here and living a decent life. Not normal. Normal's overrated. Can't anybody tell me what normal is, but I'll tell you what decent is. It's a simple word, but yet not simply followed. And to be a simple individual and a productive member of society, that's why we created at Legacy Programs a one-stop shop. And you can find us on Facebook. You have everything. You have from mental health to relationships to marriage to reentry to traumatic experiences as a child. And reentry is so much more complicated than I thought it was in the beginning. Until I got out and I started practicing it. And reentry is life. You know, when people are coming out, we have to re-educate them. We have to reteach them. We have to rewire. But most importantly, we have to take the time to do it. And if you're not part of the solution, as Leona says, you're part of the problem. And if you want to sit there and stick your head in the sand and act like nothing's wrong, then go ahead. But for us advocates out here that are trying to do it, we're going to get this done one way or another. And I'll tell you this right now. I wish somebody would give me $5,000 or $100,000. You know how many people's lives I can change with that money? That would be ridiculously too much as it is. It doesn't take much to change a person's life. And what the money that's being put into these systems and these institutions, it's being wasted and it's being squandered into the pockets of a prison gang, which is bigger than the inmates. It's called the staff. You know, they bring in all the drugs. They conduct all the misconduct. They create the abuse. And yet nobody's acknowledging that. And the officers' union in California has become so big that it elects or it rejects the next governor coming in. So tell me what's wrong with that. How is one organization like that, one union, so powerful that they can control every aspect around the United States? Yet if any business out in California – was ran like CDCR, they would be shut down. If any building in California was being ran like CDCR, they would be condemned. But yet they allow these prisons that are built in the 70s. They allow these prisons to where raccoons and mice are stealing our foods, you know, our canteen and our property. But yet we turn a blind eye to that. You know, we had raccoons coming up from the dorm in CRC in L.A. in Norco, and the COs, they didn't even care. For 2 months, raccoons were coming from the roof and in the bottom. But yet, if there was any type of business that was being ran, they would be shut down by the government. So, like you say, who's minding the forest?
You know, it's sad. It really is. We have, you know what, people, a lot of times people say, you know, we're always on the low of the totem pole. A lot of people say that they don't have the authority, or they don't have the courage, or they don't have the ability to speak out to all these people that are all for persecution, affliction, and throwing people in prison, locking up the doors and throwing away the key. A lot of people think that their words are not going to help, that they're helpless because they can't speak for on behalf of these things. We're giving, when we can't speak out and when we can't show that we are independent in what we think and what we say and how we feel, we're only giving in to those in power that don't have the wisdom, don't have the ability, don't have the heart. We're just giving them more reason to feel that they're above us all. Until people can start speaking up and speaking out about these injustices, they're going to be controlled. They might not think it, but they're controlled as well as those incarcerated, because they see injustice going on. They're not speaking out. So every time they don't speak out, it's given the people in power and those that are full of greed and those that are looking out for themselves and their friends, their peers, those are the ones that are going to come out on top, because they know that they have put fear into those that are average citizens or lower class citizens. And I won't say lower class. They just don't have that motivation to speak out. But when you start speaking out on behalf of others and on behalf of injustice, that's when you start getting respect. You're not going to please everyone. You're going to have some people that are going to be against you, but the majority are going to speak. They're going to respect you because you're speaking out. You're showing assertiveness, aggressiveness. You're not showing weakness and mildness and lowly. People can either, well, they can either speak out and they can do something about it, or they can sit back and let those who are full of greed and power, they can let them continue to rule the country and rule them, because as long as they're not speaking out, they're showing their own weaknesses.
Well, and like I always say, Leona, I think it's a responsibility of the formerly incarcerated, too, to put their voice out there. But the unfortunate part is that there is a time, which was just very shortly, that we weren't allowed to voice our opinion or our experiences because it was wrong and we were going to be retaliated against. But now there's so many sites that you could go on to share your life, to share your experience, that you can't be stopped. And it's a freedom. We're getting our freedom of speech back in a fraction that we should. But you know, you could go to all these different websites. I think you named 40 of them this morning in 2 minutes. And, you know, if you go to Facebook and you hit up Legacy Programs, or if you hit up Each One Teach One or We Are Their Voices, there's Factually Innocent. There's so many resources. And it's important to put the product out there for people to understand and then allow them to invest what they want. And that's how we breed and we create advocates and activists. And it's now's the time to act, and we have to put more stock into our people that are coming home. You know, we talk about the coronavirus all the time, and I was reading something on by Damon John from FUBU. And, of course, I'm on LinkedIn, and I called them out. And I asked them for 1 week, just focus on reentry. Focus on the prison population. Because he made a stupid post that said, well, glad these days are behind us. Looks like we're going to get back to normal. But there's still people dying in the prisons. They're on their fourth wave right now of the coronavirus. Fourth. And it's because of how they handled it initially, about just throwing people into the same dorm that are sick, and it morphed into something that is just the virus, the strand, is completely different than what's out here. And what people aren't realizing, you sit there and go, well, how does that concern me? Well, those COs, people are coming home to the community. Those COs are going in there and coming out here. You don't think it's going to affect us again? So, I mean, as much as we want to sit there and say things are behind us and, you know, out of sight, out of mind, there's real-life stuff going on in there. There's still mistreatment going on. There's still a green wall in California in the prison system. There's still misconduct of them beating up inmates for no reason. And they run the politics on the yard. You want to talk about violent prisons? It's not us that run those yards. It's the COs. They allow the killings. They allow the stabbings. And they allow the politics. They could stop it. And that's why mass incarceration is not the answer. And we should not have COs in positions to be governing the population. It needs to be therapists. It needs to be life coaches. And it needs to be real people that are trying to do the a real thing, which is rehabilitation.
Yeah. I just get upset when I think about some of these things, because it's so simple. Like I say, people in society can make a big difference. If other countries can have peaceful communities, if they can have humane facilities, humane and educational, higher educational programs, if they can treat their prisoners like people, like human beings and citizens, then we should be able to do it. We're living in a country, though, that's so full of vengeance and hatred and racism and everything else. And that's what doesn't make sense. If they can do it, why should we have mass incarceration? Why almost 2.5 million incarcerated people in the United States when they don't have, I don't think, 100,000 in other places? Norway, the role model, why don't they, some politicians I understand have gone to Norway to find out how they are so successful. They've met with people in Germany and other places. Why aren't they following up with it? Why aren't they doing something like it? And what did they do instead in the United States of America? They've taken the voting rights away from prisoners who are serving time in prison. What is being a citizen of the United States, what does that have to do with them taking their voting rights away when they commit a crime? That's the childish mentality of our government leaders. It's almost like five-year-old thinking.
Well, we talked about this a month ago, of why they do that. Because if they allow inmates to vote, does anyone understand how big of an impact that the politicians have to change their platform? That they have to sit there and change everything that they, you know, because they're appeasing the community by saying, oh, we're tough on crime. We're doing this to protect you. But they're not doing this to protect us. They're doing this to invest in their own. You know, in order to get a package, did you know how much a thing of Colgate toothpaste costs in prison? Minimum of $4. Minimum. And that's if you're lucky. You know how much it costs for a soup? 25 to 30 cents each. So it's like, where's this money going towards? There's a 300%, 400% markup. And they do this because they're all invested into keeping us in prison, because they're making money off packages, off of phones, off of the food, everything. Like the prison has a thing called PIA. It's called Prison Industry Authority. And what they do is they make their own lunches. Those lunches only cost about 2 cents a piece. So it's like all it consists of is a piece of bologna, two pieces of bread, some rancid sunflower seeds, and a cookie. That's what we eat for lunch every day. So tell me how much that and a thing of Salisbury steak or a scoop of spaghetti with some dried out veggies and two pieces of bread costs $100,000 a year. You know, they learned how to invest in themselves, and everything. It's a lucrative business now. Inmates aren't going to prison to be rehabilitated anymore. They're going there to be herded and to be to be preyed upon financially.
And that's just
so,
what it
I mean,
is.
When, yeah, but when we talk about our loved ones and you know, why people go to prison, it used to be so they could come out and be better people. But what actions are they taking to better us except by manipulating the system itself? And it's a double standard. You know, you could rob from this, you could fraud the system, but I can't. You know, you could sit there, you know, CEOs are buying cars off of 3 days of work. And this is not, these are facts. This is not something that I'm just pulling out of my pocket. This is something I've heard CEOs say they could call in sick, pull it over, overnighter, go on transportation, and then they end up buying a car that weekend. So tell me where the rehabilitation's at, you know, and why we're locking everybody up. We have to educate the people coming out. We have to educate the people going in, and we have to educate the youth. That's the key, and that's why I do what I do, is because if we educate the youth, my goal is to mess up their count, is to take the money out of their pocket. And if I could stop 5 people from going to prison, that's 5 less people, $500,000 less that they have to benefit from these people. And so, and you're thinking about, like, okay, the people are going to prison. They're sending people to prison for multiple years. The laws aren't even just. There's innocent people in prison right now that are deemed innocent and that they should be home right now, but yet they have to – it took them 20 minutes to convict them, but yet it's taken 10 years to get them out of prison after they're already innocent. Tell me where the justice is in that.
You know, that's the truth. There's still a lot of people incarcerated who are found innocent through DNA, through the innocence part, and they're still sitting in their cells. I don't understand it myself.
It's a problem. Something, we went wrong somewhere, and we have to accept responsibility. When we sit there and go, well, who's responsible for it? It's a community. We outnumber the officials. We elect the officials. But yet we sit here with our heads in the sand going, oh, well, it's the law. They shouldn't be breaking it. Why are they breaking the law? You know what? You know, but I did time with – you remember the his name was Will. He did the third strike for the pizza in California.
No.
Okay, so there's a guy named Will something. He committed a third strike for stealing a slice of pizza from a kid. And he was a repeat offender. I did time with him in Salinas Valley. And nobody knew who he was until he paroled. And that man, you know, why did he steal that piece of pizza? And nobody understands he was homeless. That man they kept locking him up, but they kept releasing him homeless. They never did anything for the man, for him to change, for him to have an opportunity to succeed. So every time they let him out, they knew he was coming back. You know, so when you let somebody out that has no money, no shelter, no clothes, what are they going to do? They're going to take it, you know, because it's based off survival and not living. So
and
how
got
many
life,
people?
And huh? he got life for the 3 strikes? Because
yes, he did like 27 years, 28 years.
With 3 minor strikes, just trying to survive.
Yeah, but the problem was they kept releasing him into society homeless. They didn't give him a place to stay. They didn't provide any services for the success. Right. So, and that was the problem, is they were repeating the cycle. There was nothing new that they were trying to do. And to this day, we still haven't learned from our mistakes. We're still releasing inmates without IDs. We're still releasing inmates without Social Security cards. In the program or out here with no program available. Like, what's wrong with this picture? And yet everybody's blaming the inmate for reoffending. Well, what chance are you giving this person trying to reenter a chance? And so, you know, these are things that the community is not aware of, and they need to be aware of so they could take action and start putting their services out there and start, you know, going back to the model of Take the Village. Because we lost something throughout the years, and the COVID thing has really disconnected us further. Everybody talks about the coronavirus and how it's cut us off from being social beings. Well, how is prison any different? You know, how is locking somebody away any different than what you're going through with the coronavirus of being in, being self-contained in your home? Except you got the luxury of eating whatever you want. You got the luxury of walking down the street when you want. And you could go buy something, you just have to wear a mask. But, I mean, there's just, I think people lost touch.
Wow. There's so much that needs to be done, and so much that needs, you know, we talk about the audience, we talk about the public not being, not being aware, but is it really not being aware, or is it being aware and not wanting to do anything about it? You know, that's the question we need to ask. Is it that they're not aware of all the abuses, the suicides, all the unfairness, everything that's going on, even the victims within the prison walls, as well as on the outside? You know, we can't feel bad for some victims and not all victims. And this is why someone called into the show one day and said, what about the victims? We haven't turned a blind eye towards the victims, but we have to also remember there's victims on both sides. And all we're asking is for the people in the society and communities to be neutral, in these situations, to give support to the victims, but also look at the causes behind the crime, as Marion Jacobs continuously talks about, as Lawrence Drenk is talking about now. Give consideration to both sides. There's no reason why we have to take sides. And this is what the media does now. The media takes sides. When I was a kid growing up, we got the news and that was it. The people reporting the news didn't interfere. They didn't take sides. They just reported the news. Now we have a very biased media out in the world today, and at least in this country, who have to take sides, who have to keep reporting, who have to keep downing, who have to keep talking about these things. And yet if they're not talking about those things, they're constantly talking about animals. They're talking about fish. They're talking about dwarfs. They're talking about whales. They're talking about everything but the news that should be reported. And that is the problematic issues that are going on in this country that need to be addressed. And we're talking about some of those things right now.
Yeah, the stuff has to be talked about, because if we continue to, you know, there comes a point when information is being put out there and you're ignoring it, you're no longer oblivious to the fact. You are now just being ignorant, and you're choosing to ignore it. Once enough of us come out and we speak about this, what's going to happen is people are going to have to take action. Otherwise, they have nobody to blame but themselves. And people could sit there and say that they care about reform and they care about the people coming out and not do nothing. That's fine. But when you get your house burglarized or somebody in your family gets killed because somebody can't take it out here and they feel that they have to make a mark, you know, then who do we blame then? And that's why it takes a village. Yeah, you know, I honor the victims. The victims are it's unfortunate, but it's not the focus needs to be on the society itself on why that victim was created. You know, what makes a person to go out and want to commit a crime? And I'm gonna tell you right now, when I got out, and I was homeless and jobless. And the messed up thing is my parole officer, when I got out, kept saying, go get a job. You know, you need to do this, you need to do that. I didn't know how to fill out paperwork. And I couldn't go get a job because I didn't have my ID. And then when I would go try to get my ID, they said I was gone for so long, I wasn't in the system. So then I had to go get a birth certificate. It took me 2 months to get a birth certificate. I didn't officially get my my ID in about, I think it was like almost 100 days. But yet the prison said that they would provide me with an ID on my way out. But they were ill-advised that I wasn't in the system. They were so overbooked that they had no way of getting me my ID, but they couldn't tell me that. So when I came out, I had all these expectations of how I was going to reentry back to society, how I was going to be normal, and everything that I created, every expectation was a letdown. And with every letdown, I kept getting frustrated and going, you know what, I'm just going to go back to prison. I can't handle it out here. It's so much easier in prison. And I had to eventually remind myself that this is by design. This is how the system does it to make us choose to go back. So when somebody reoffends, it's because we choose to go back because the system has created a gateway for us to somehow feel that it's easier in prison than it is out here. And they knew what to expect out here. So instead of me getting angry and going back to prison, I created my business. I created my organization, and I started reaching out and networking with everybody. I'm going to tell you, the sources that I have and the network and the support network, I have great people in my life right now, and that's by design. I created that because I asked for help. I demanded help, and I put myself out there for everybody else to learn from. I don't care. Like this stuff that I'm going through right now, I'll go through it again, but I'm going to make damn sure that nobody else behind me has to go through this. So, and that's why we provide, somebody tried telling me one time about reentry, about what people are posting on Facebook. And, you know, you can't put reentry into a category. You have to, it's everything in life. It's from when you wake up to when you go to sleep. It's every single moment, every detail. And I'm learning that right now. So it makes it a little easier for me to be successful and for me to be at peace with myself. And for, you know, when we're aware of these issues of the disconnect from society, we're able to do something about it. And that's what we have to do. So we, you know, us as the formerly incarcerated and even the incarcerated, we have to learn how to communicate as human beings, not as convicts, not as inmates, and not as parolees, but as human beings. There's a different way of communicating, and it's not the same. And so, you know, when enough of us get in one room, enough of us will have one voice, and eventually we'll go in one direction. But until then, you got everybody with their own agenda and their own ego on the line. And to be honest, some people don't belong in advocacy. Some people don't have what it takes. And the reason why they don't is because they don't network. They don't work with each other. They're pushing for their own cause, and selfish things never have positive outcomes.
There's one coalition that's talking about abolishing LWOP, yet they don't want politicians involved. Well, to me, that's not advocacy. You know, that's not, because it's the politicians who write the bills. It's the politicians who everybody should network with if they're going to be looking at criminal injustice and, you know, if they're looking at criminal reform or if they're looking at prison reform or whatever. It's the politicians they have to network with. And yet these people recently said that they got the names of a lot of prisoners from one of the prisons, and they got the names of the politicians. How can it be? I try to understand some of these advocacy groups and organizations and individual advocates who kind of like give mixed messages. And we see a lot of that happening in the world too, in the country. And unfortunately, people don't pick up on them. A lot of advocates don't even pick up on other advocates who are just barely doing something, but they're always out there. Again, they're always out there in the limelight trying to get their organization or their names known so that they can get funding, or so that they can just have other lawyers refer everybody to them when the prisoners need help. And this is what's happening. In Massachusetts, there's a lot of legal advocates, lawyers, who are consistently referring people to other law firms who consistently say the same thing. We don't have the resources or the manpower. Yet, in the organization that I have, we have so many of their clients coming to us for help, because they're being denied the services they once had with these law firms or legal advocates. So we're covering a lot of cases. We're not lawyers, though. All we do is extensive research, trying to find pro bono lawyers, trying to find help for these indigent prisoners. But the ones that have the money, the ones that have the power, the ones that have the resources out there, family members that are connected with these law firms and lawyers, those are the ones that are getting the treatment. So all the funding is going to either advocates, that have loved ones inside that are getting the monies to help their own loved one, or they're getting the monies to help themselves. And you mentioned CEOs in law enforcement that weigh 200 and 300 pounds. They're getting all the benefits. They're reaping the benefits as well of the taxpayers' dollars. They can't run, so they shoot people in the back. They shoot people out there in the street because they can't run fast enough to catch up to them. That could be another reason why. We don't know. But we do know the changes have to be made.
Absolutely. And the thing about advocacy, we have to depend. We have to work with law enforcement. We have to work with the public officials, because all we're doing as advocates, we're not demanding change. We're offering to work with them to do the things that they don't want to do. And that's key in being an advocate, is getting in where you fit in and then pushing what you want. First, you have to get your foot in the door. And that's the difference between an activist and an advocate. An advocate works from within. You know, an activist is outside banging the garbage cans, and that's fine. You know, because we all need each other. But when we deal with advocacy, we ask what we can do for them, what we could do, what they refuse to do themselves because they're lazy. And that's key. And, we have to provide for each other. For instance, I just got denied car insurance from Mercury because I was a felon. And the lady probably got fired for telling me that, because they don't insure felons. But yet, if you sit there and you have a felony hit and run, or you steal a car, you could be forgiven in 5 years. But I was discriminated against for car insurance that my wife was with for years because I was a felon. And I told them I was a felon, and because they asked if I was a felon, which I don't understand how they were able to do that. So, you know, when I put that out there for a pro bono lawyer to file against them for that, nobody bit. Everybody sat there and said, oh, no, we're good. We're not touching that one. Well, why not? What happened with Make Good Trouble? You know, but yet I bet you that if it went for a certain movement, I would get results, you know, but because my cause, I fight for the felons. I fight for the families that are incarcerated. I fight for the communities that have to come that we reentry into. And I tried to bring us all together on one page so we could work together. But advocacy, we have to work with each other. That's all there is to it. And if you can't work with others, then that's your fault. And you're not in the right business.
We're running out of time now. We have about 50 seconds, but I want to say something real quick. The lawyers in the law firms, the people, advocates, a lot of them, they have the connections. So the ones that are getting the help are their own friends, their own family members, people that they know, or people that they know who know others. They were cliques in elementary school and junior high school and high school, and there's cliques on the outside. So we're going to wrap it up with you. If you can, once again, give your contact information, Lawrence, and we will be back next Sunday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. So, Lawrence, if you can just give your contact information, please.
Absolutely. You could find me on Facebook, Legacy Programs Education and Reentry. You could also find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Yelp. I am everywhere with Legacy Programs Education and Reentry. You could Gmail me at lawrencedrink@gmail.com or legacyprogramseducation@gmail.com as well. So, and I'm here for the families. If anyone needs counseling, I am a consultant for prison and reentry, and I'm here to serve my community.
And if you type in the internet browser, Lawrence Drink, you will find everything out about Lawrence. He's all over the internet. So type in Lawrence Drink, and you'll find out more about him. Again, please, please, please try to join forces with him and other organizations that are actually doing something to make changes in the penal system, make changes in the criminal justice system, and reform the parole board, eliminate solitary confinement, restrictive housing. Please do this, because there's so many people that have given up hope in the penal system, that have committed suicide, some that have been severely abused by the penal system and the overseers. So we thank you for being with us, everyone. Lawrence, once again, I thank you for being on with us. You've been a blessing, and I hope that we can share more insight into the penal system and the problems that are going on behind those prison walls as well as in the communities with those who choose to let the overseers slide while they others do the time for a crime that they were committed of. So once again, we thank you all, and we look forward to all of you listening in next week. Thank you once again, and I appreciate everything that you said, Lawrence. We are now going to end this
thank
episode.
Thank you so much. Love you. God bless you.
God bless.